Chapter 62. Distracted between doubts and hopes, dismayed by the sound of bells pealing out the arrival of Pedrito Montero, Sotillo had spent the morning in battling with his thoughts, a contest to which he was unequal, from the vacuity of his mind, and the violence of his passions. Disappointment, greed, anger, and fear made a tumult in the colonel's breast louder than the din of bells in the town. Nothing he had planned had come to pass. Neither Sulaco nor the silver of the mine had fallen into his hands. He had performed no military exploit to secure his position, and had obtained no enormous booty to make off with. Pedrito Montero, either as friend or foe, filled him with dread. The sound of bells maddened him. Imagining at first that he might be attacked at once, he had made his battalion stand to arms on the shore. He walked to and fro all the length of the room, stopping sometimes to gnaw the fingertips of his right hand with a lurid sideways glare fixed on the floor. Then, with a sullen, repelling glance all round, he would resume his tramping in savage aloofness. His hat, horsewhip, sword, and revolver were lying on the table. His officers, crowding the window giving the view of the town gate, disputed amongst themselves the use of his field glass bought last year on long credit from Manzani. It passed from hand to hand, and the possessor for the time being was besieged by anxious inquiries. There is nothing to see, he would repeat impatiently. There was nothing. And when the picket in the bushes near the Casa Viola had been ordered to fall back upon the main body, no stir of life appeared on the stretch of moldy and arid land between the town and the waters of the port. But late in the afternoon a horseman issuing from the gate was made out riding up fearlessly. It was an emissary from Senor Fuentes. Being all alone he was allowed to come on. Dismounting at the great door he greeted the silent bystanders with cheery impudence, and begged to be taken up at once to the I valiant colonel. Senor Fuentes, on entering upon his functions of chief politico, had turned his diplomatic abilities to getting hold of the harbor as well as of the mine. The man he pitched upon to negotiate with Sotillo was a notary public, whom the revolution had found languishing in the common jail on a charge of forging documents. Liberated by the mob along with the other victims of Blanco tyranny, he had hastened to offer his services to the new government. He set out determined to display much zeal and eloquence in trying to induce Sotillo to come into town alone for a conference with Pedrito Montero. Nothing was further from the colonel's intentions. The mere fleeting idea of trusting himself into the famous Pedrito's hands had made him feel unwell several times. It was out of the question, it was madness. And to put himself in open hostility was madness too. It would render impossible a systematic search for that treasure, for that wealth of silver which he seemed to feel somewhere about, to scent somewhere near. But where? Where? Heavens! Where? Oh! Why had he allowed that doctor to go? Imbecile that he was! But no! It was the only right course, he reflected distractedly, while the messenger waited downstairs chatting agreeably to the officers. It was in that scoundrelly doctor's true interest to return with positive information. But what if anything stopped him? A general prohibition to leave the town, for instance. There would be patrols. The colonel, seizing his head in his hands, turned in his tracks, as if struck with vertigo. A flash of craven inspiration suggested to him an expedient not unknown to European statesmen when they wish to delay a difficult negotiation. Booted and spurred, he scrambled into the hammock with undignified haste. His handsome face had turned yellow with the strain of weighty cares. The ridge of his shapely nose had grown sharp. The audacious nostrils appeared mean and pinched. The velvety, caressing glance of his fine eyes seemed dead, and even decomposed. For these almond-shaped, languishing orbs had become inappropriately bloodshot with much sinister sleeplessness. He addressed the surprised envoy of Senor Fuentes in a deadened, exhausted voice. It came pathetically feeble from under a pile of ponchos, which buried his elegant person right up to the black mustaches, uncurled, pendant, in sign of bodily prostration and mental incapacity. Fever, fever, a heavy fever had overtaken the my valiant colonel. A wavering wildness of expression, caused by the passing spasms of a slight colic which had declared itself suddenly, and the rattling teeth of repressed panic, had a genuineness which impressed the envoy. It was a cold fit. The colonel explained that he was unable to think, to listen, to speak. With an appearance of superhuman effort, the colonel gasped out that he was not in a state to return a suitable reply, or to execute any of His Excellency's orders. But tomorrow, tomorrow, ah, tomorrow, let His Excellency Don Pedro be without uneasiness. The brave Esmeralda regiment held the harbor, held, and closing his eyes, he rolled his aching head like a half-delirious invalid under the inquisitive stare of the envoy, who was obliged to bend down over the hammock in order to catch the painful and broken accents. Meantime, Colonel Sotillo trusted that His Excellency's humanity would permit the doctor, the English doctor, to come out of town with his case of foreign remedies to attend upon him. He begged anxiously His Worship the Caballero now present for the grace of looking in as he passed the Casa Gould, and informing the English doctor, who was probably there, that his services were immediately required by Colonel Sotillo, lying ill of fever in the custom house. Immediately. Most urgently required. Awaited with extreme impatience. 1,000 thanks. He closed his eyes wearily, and would not open them again, lying perfectly still, deaf, dumb, insensible, overcome, vanquished, crushed, annihilated by the fell disease. But as soon as the other had shut after him the door of the landing, the colonel leaped out with a fling of both feet in an avalanche of woolen coverings. His spurs having become entangled in a perfect welter of ponchos, he nearly pitched on his head, and did not recover his balance till the middle of the room. Concealed behind the half-closed jalousies, he listened to what went on below. The envoy had already mounted, and turning to the morose officers occupying the great doorway, took off his hat formally. "Caballeros," he said, in a very loud tone, "allow me to recommend you to take great care of your colonel. It has done me much honor and gratification to have seen you all, a fine body of men exercising the soldierly virtue of patience in this exposed situation, where there is much sun, and no water to speak of, while a town full of wine and feminine charms is ready to embrace you for the brave men you are. Caballeros, I have the honor to salute you. There will be much dancing tonight in Sulaco. Goodbye." But he reined in his horse, and inclined his head sideways on seeing the old major step out, very tall and meager, in a straight narrow coat coming down to his ankles as it were the casing of the regimental colors rolled round their staff. The intelligent old warrior, after enunciating in a dogmatic tone the general proposition that the world was full of traitors, went on pronouncing deliberately a panegyric upon Sotillo. He ascribed to him with leisurely emphasis every virtue under heaven, summing it all up in an absurd colloquialism current amongst the lower class of Occidentals, especially about Esmeralda, and he concluded, with a sudden rise in the voice, "a man of many teeth hombre de muchos dientes." Senor. "As to us," he pursued, "portentous and impressive, your worship is beholding the finest body of officers in the Republic, men unequaled for valor and sagacity. Why hombres de muchos dientes?" "What? All of them?" inquired the disreputable envoy of Senor Fuentes, with a faint, derisive smile. "Todos." "Senor," the major affirmed, gravely, with conviction. "Men of many teeth." The other wheeled his horse to face the portal resembling the high gate of a dismal barn. He raised himself in his stirrups, extended one arm. He was a facetious scoundrel, entertaining for these stupid Occidentals a feeling of great scorn natural in the native from the central provinces. The folly of Esmeraldians especially aroused his amused contempt. He began an oration upon Pedro Montero, keeping a solemn countenance. He flourished his hand, as if introducing him to their notice. And when he saw every face set, all the eyes fixed upon his lips, he began to shout a sort of catalogue of perfections: generous, valorous, affable, profound. He snatched off his hat enthusiastically: statesman, an invincible chief of partisans. He dropped his voice startlingly to a deep, hollow note, and a dentist. He was off instantly at a smart walk. The rigid straddle of his legs, the turned-out feet, the stiff back, the rakish slant of the sombrero above the square, motionless set of the shoulders expressing an infinite, awe-inspiring impudence. Upstairs, behind the jalousies, Sotillo did not move for a long time. The audacity of the fellow appalled him. What were his officers saying below? They were saying nothing. Complete silence. He quaked. It was not thus that he had imagined himself at that stage of the expedition. He had seen himself triumphant, unquestioned, appeased, the idol of the soldiers, weighing in secret complacency the agreeable alternatives of power and wealth open to his choice. Alas! How different! Distracted, restless, supine, burning with fury, or frozen with terror, he felt a dread as fathomless as the sea creep upon him from every side. That rogue of a doctor had to come out with his information. That was clear. It would be of no use to him alone. He could do nothing with it. Malediction. The doctor would never come out. He was probably under arrest already, shut up together with Don Carlos. He laughed aloud insanely. Ha! 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 It was Pedrito Montero who would get the information. Ha! 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 And the silver. Ha! All at once, in the midst of the laugh, he became motionless and silent, as if turned into stone. He too had a prisoner. A prisoner who must know the real truth. He would have to be made to speak. And Sotillo, who all that time had not quite forgotten Hirsch, felt an inexplicable reluctance at the notion of proceeding to extremities. He felt a reluctance part of that unfathomable dread that crept on all sides upon him. He remembered reluctantly, too, the dilated eyes of the hide merchant, his contortions, his loud sobs and protestations. It was not compassion, or even mere nervous sensibility. The fact was that, though Sotillo did never for a moment believe his story, he could not believe it. Nobody could believe such nonsense, yet those accents of despairing truth impressed him disagreeably. They made him feel sick. And he suspected also that the man might have gone mad with fear. A lunatic is a hopeless subject. Bah! A pretense. Nothing but a pretense. He would know how to deal with that. He was working himself up to the right pitch of ferocity. His fine eyes squinted slightly. He clapped his hands. A barefooted orderly appeared noiselessly, a corporal, with his bayonet hanging on his thigh and a stick in his hand. The colonel gave his orders, and presently the miserable Hirsch, pushed in by several soldiers, found him frowning awfully in a broad armchair, hat on head, knees wide apart, arms akimbo, masterful, imposing, irresistible, haughty, sublime, terrible. Hirsch, with his arms tied behind his back, had been bundled violently into one of the smaller rooms. For many hours he remained apparently forgotten, stretched lifelessly on the floor. From that solitude, full of despair and terror, he was torn out brutally, with kicks and blows, passive, sunken habitude. He listened to threats and admonitions, and afterwards made his usual answers to questions, with his chin sunk on his breast, his hands tied behind his back, swaying a little in front of Sotillo, and never looking up. When he was forced to hold up his head, by means of a bayonet point prodding him under the chin, his eyes had a vacant, trance-like stare, and drops of perspiration as big as peas were seen hailing down the dirt, bruises, and scratches of his white face. Then they stopped suddenly. Sotillo looked at him in silence. W, will you depart from your obstinacy, you rogue? He asked. Already a rope, whose one end was fastened to Senor Hirsch's wrists, had been thrown over a beam, and three soldiers held the other end, waiting. He made no answer. His heavy lower lip hung stupidly. Satillo made a sign. Hirsch was jerked up off his feet, and a yell of despair and agony burst out in the room, filled the passage of the great buildings, rent the air outside, caused every soldier of the camp along the shore to look up at the windows, started some of the officers in the hall babbling excitedly, with shining eyes. Others, setting their lips, looked gloomily at the floor. Satillo, followed by the soldiers, had left the room. The sentry on the landing presented arms. Hirsch went on screaming all alone behind the half-closed jalousies while the sunshine, reflected from the water of the harbor, made an ever-running ripple of light high up on the wall. He screamed with uplifted eyebrows and a wide-open mouth incredibly wide, black, enormous, full of teeth comical. In the still-burning air of the windless afternoon he made the waves of his agony travel as far as the O.S. N. Company's offices. Captain Mitchell on the balcony, trying to make out what went on generally, had heard him faintly but distinctly, and the feeble and appalling sound lingered in his ears, after he had retreated indoors with blanched cheeks. He had been driven off the balcony several times during that afternoon. Satillo, irritable, moody, walked restlessly about, held consultations with his officers, gave contradictory orders in this shrill clamor pervading the whole empty edifice. Sometimes there would be long and awful silences. Several times he had entered the torture chamber where his sword, horsewhip, revolver, and field glass were lying on the table, to ask with forced calmness, "Will you speak the truth now?" "No. I can wait." But he could not afford to wait much longer. That was just it. Every time he went in, and came out with a slam of the door, the sentry on the landing presented arms, and got in return a black, venomous, unsteady glance, which, in reality, saw nothing at all, being merely the reflection of the soul within a soul of gloomy hatred, irresolution, avarice, and fury. The sun had set, when he went in once more. A soldier carried in two lighted candles and slunk out, shutting the door without noise. "Speak, thou Jewish child of the devil. The silver, I say. Where is it? Where have you foreign rogues hidden it?" "Confessor," a slight quiver passed up the taut rope from the racked limbs, but the body of Senor Hirsch, enterprising businessman from Esmeralda, hung under the heavy beam perpendicular and silent, facing the colonel awfully. The inflow of the night air, cooled by the snows of the Sierra, spread gradually a delicious freshness through the close heat of the room. "Speak, thief, scoundrel, picker, or—" Satillo had seized the riding whip, and stood with his arm lifted up. For a word, for one little word, he felt he would have knelt, cringed, groveled on the floor before the drowsy, conscious stare of those fixed eyeballs starting out of the grimy, disheveled head that drooped very still with its mouth closed askew. The colonel ground his teeth with rage and struck. The Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.